Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, meeting two guests, new guests actually, with the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center today on the show. Yi-Ying Zhang is the new associate director at GLBRC. She has 20 years of experience in business strategy and program management in renewable energy and sustainability, and has a strong passion for women's leadership and diversity. Her technical expertise is in water resources and hydropower engineering. Yi-Ying Zhang, welcome. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Larry. It's a great honor to be here. I look forward to discussing with you and the audience about women leadership and climate change and Bioenergy Research Institute here.
Yeah, we've got a lot to talk about. And Julia Martin, a Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center scientist and a grad student in the Department of Bacteriology at UW-Madison, joins us as well. She's the 2021 recipient of the Jennifer L. Reed Bioenergy Science Award. Julia Martin, great to have you with us as well.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Well, great to have you along. And as you listen to our two scientists talk, I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments about bioenergy. You can call us, of course, at 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Yi-Ying, let's start with you. I'd like to get to know a little more about you. It sounds like you have lots of experience with environmentally and sustainability issues. Tell us a bit about your background.
Yeah, thank you, Larry. I would love to share that. I grew up in China near the longest river in China, Yangtze River, which is also one of the largest and longest river in the world. So I really witnessed how nature and climate can change and impact people's lives. Later on, the Three Gorges Dam was built not far away from the hometown, so I got exposed to hydropower and renewable energy in a bigger sense. That's how I got into hydropower to begin with. And over the course of 20 years of my career, I got more exposed to other renewables, the solar, wind, geothermal, and bioenergy. I really see the bright future of these energy sources being able to help address climate challenges that we're facing today. So I was extremely fortunate to join GLBRC as associate director. And that gives me the opportunity to work alongside with the scientists there to help create and develop those technologies that can help us advance the bioenergy research. I was also involved in a lot of climate change studies around the world and also in Wisconsin to be directly impacting our life here. For example, I was involved in the 2008 Lake Delta restoration, which was extremely sad event and warned us about how powerful nature can be to impact our lives. I was trapped in the 2018 storm event right in Madison. That was over 1,000-year rainforest storm event, right? I was on Mineral Point Road for 3 hours, couldn't get home, and in the hotel that night. So that just tells us climate change is real. It's impacted our everyday lives, and it can happen to us any day of our life. So to be able to have the direct impact to this kind of challenges is just a huge honor for me, and I just love being in this on a daily basis.
Well, I tell you what, it's really fun to hear you talk, and I want to learn some more about your work as well. But I want to turn to Julia Martin for a minute. You're a PhD student in UW-Madison. You study an organism called Zymomonas mobilis. That's a mouthful. For me, anyway, and I'm not sure I got the pronunciation right. I think I did. But how did you get interested in working with possible renewable energy alternatives?
Yeah, well, I was always interested in trying to apply science to, make this world a better place. And when I started as an undergrad, my research was focused on bioremediation. So trying to get microorganisms to degrade some of the toxins that are present in the environment. And then when I started grad school, I was really excited to be able to join the Amador Nagez lab because they were doing some really interesting research on bacterial metabolism and applying that research to biofuels as a way to help provide alternatives to fossil fuels. So I've been really lucky that I've been able to work on such interesting projects that I feel have a really positive impact. And I'm hoping that I can continue that kind of work in the future. It's an honor to be able to work on such a great project.
Well, you know, this is not the kind of thing that would come to most people's mind when they think about a career. I want to work with bacteria, these kinds of bacteria. How did that interest develop for you?
Well, I was really fascinated with Zymomonas mobilis because, you know, it's similar to brewer's yeast. So just like brewer's yeast is the organism that converts the sugars from grains into ethanol to make beer, Zymomonas is the bacteria that converts the sugars from agave into ethanol to make pulque, which is an alcoholic beverage that's commonly made and enjoyed in Mexico City. And it's been made in that region since the time of the Aztecs. So humans have been using Zymomonas to make ethanol from plant biomass for thousands of years. So really what I'm doing is just a continuation of a long history of humans using Zymomonas to make useful bioproducts. And now, of course, we want to try to harness some of the capacity of this bacteria to make even more valuable products for us.
Yeah, and you're involved in kind of stressing Zymomonas, aren't you, to get it to produce more?
Yeah, so one of the products that we're interested in making is a class of molecules called terpenoids, which sounds like turpentine for a reason, because turpentine is made of terpenoids, but they're a really broad category of molecules, and they have all kinds of really valuable uses. So some terpenoids are suitable as, you know, high-grade fuels. Other terpenoids can be used as pharmaceuticals or flavor additives or fragrances. So we want to be able to use Zymomonas to, instead of making ethanol, make these terpenoids. But it's a tricky problem because, you know, bacterial metabolism is a really complicated process. So my approach has been to examine how Zymomonas responds to environmental stressors, because bacteria, like any other organism, have to, you know, respond to changes in the environment. And one of the ways that Zymomonas does this is by changing the amount of terpenoids it makes. So by looking at how Zymomonas natively controls terpenoid production, we can get a better idea of how we can go in and manipulate that terpenoid production to make the types of products that we want.
Oh, man. And the types of products are what?
Well, so, yeah, there's all kinds of terpenoids that we're interested in. Some of them are maybe kind of fragrances you might be familiar with. So potentially we could be making things like pinene, which is what gives pine this kind of characteristic smell. Mm-hmm. Or another one that I think people might recognize is limonene, which is kind of the citrus smell. Mm-hmm. And right now, these types of fragrances are made from, you know, petroleum fossil fuel sources. So if we can find a way to make them in a more sustainable way, that would really be ideal. And then all kinds of other fuels, you know, things like jet fuel or methyl butanol is one of our target fuel compounds. So we're really trying to build a profile of valuable chemicals that we can make
and save and then not have to use petroleum products. Yeah, that's great. We, Yi-Ying, I want to get back to you. And I see we've got some callers online and an email here, but maybe just broadly speaking here, we've talked about the GLBRC before on the show, but I think for those who haven't heard about it, I mean, just talk a bit more about sort of the broad brush here of what goes on.
Yeah, absolutely. So GLBRC is one of the four bioenergy research centers across the country that was established and directly funded by the U.S. Department of Energy. We were one of the three original ones, and then another one from UIUC, University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, was added on about 4 years ago. So our history traces back to 2007. We've been in this industry doing fundamental research in bioenergy for the last 14 years. Our vision and our goal is to basically develop sustainable biofuels and bioproducts from any usable portion of dedicated energy crops going on marginal lands, which means we're targeting those vegetation and plants that are not traditionally used for food. So we're not competing on food sources. And also we're growing these crops, energy crops, on unsustainable lands that are not suitable for food production. So in this way, we're not competing on land uses with agricultural users, and we're also taking advantage of the land that people are not usually taking advantage of. So that would increase our ability to build local refineries in the Midwest that can help our farmers, help our local economy, as well as producing those products to replace oil and gas petroleum products that are creating those greenhouse emissions that are causing climate change. So that's fundamentally what we're doing.
It's pretty cool. Let's take a call. Mark and Kimberly, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Mark. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
What you were just talking about sounds like the President Bush era schemes. And I'm wondering about manure and in Wisconsin and elsewhere, the huge, farms and the methane risk with climate change and capturing that energy. I'm wondering, about getting, if you can get the methane out and then spread it on the fields and where the research is. Best research is being done on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is research, if I'm not mistaken, going on in this area. Is there not?
I'll try to take a crack at it. Maybe Julia can add more from the technical point of view. So, yes, there are researchers. There are also ways we're developing technologies where we can have more sustainable agricultural activities. So we don't have to use as much manure to increase the nutrient in the soil. We're fine-tuning those ways, methods to evaluate how much manure, how much nutrient the soil would need for each type of crop so we can more precisely inject or apply the right amount of manure inside the soil so we don't take the risk of releasing more than what's necessary. That's one of the ways we're addressing this issue.
Julia, anything to add there?
Yeah, I will say one of the areas of research that I find really interesting that's going on in the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center is the association of soil microbes with the energy crops. So there's a lot that the bacteria and other microbes in the soil do to contribute to the types of nutrients that are available and also the crop's ability to withstand environmental stressors like drought. And so I think that understanding the soil microbes and how they interact with plant roots also helps to kind of minimize the need to input nutrients into the system.
Mark, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Richard called from Lake Mills, and he's noticed that many power plants in smaller towns have been shutting down. He mentioned the one in Cassville, Wisconsin, right off the Mississippi River. And he's just wondering why that's happening. Ying, any comment?
Yeah, sure. So the overall trend in this country and globally is that we are slowly getting away from the traditional fossil fuel plants who have been running for a long time and are inefficient, are actually getting old and not operating on an efficient level, but also are producing a lot of air pollutions. And with the newer and more renewable sources getting into the grid, we're actually making up the energy need by implementing wind and solar and geothermal and hydro into the grid. So we'll have a healthier and cleaner blend of these energy sources so we can slowly retire some of these old fossil fuel plants who are contributing to climate change.
Yeah,
I hope that's,
and the hydro,
that's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking about the Wisconsin River and I'm thinking about this, I'm thinking back years now, but it, at one point, maybe it still is, called the hardest working river in the country because of the hydroelectric dams on it.
Yeah, exactly. There are a lot of dams on Wisconsin River. As a matter of fact, I've been involved in a lot of them. The closest one to us in Madison is Prairie du Sac. So we certainly have a lot of dams on this river that have been working for, some of them have been working for over 100 years in generating clean, sustainable energy for our community.
Yeah, and I think the ones that in the smaller areas like are the smaller dams, there's environmental reasons for eliminating some. A lot of it has to do with cost when it comes to replacing, if you had to replace those dams, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, you're absolutely right. There are multiple reasons for some of these older plants to be retired because they have been running for a long time. They're inefficient. They have dam safety issues, which takes a lot of money to address, but relatively small financial returns. And also a lot of these dams used to be used for paper mills, and those paper mills no longer are in existence or in need of the energy from the hydro plants. Therefore, it takes away the economic value of these plants. That's part of the reason, and of course, there's other environmental reasons that are driving some of that. But those are still a relatively small portfolio of the overall generations that hydropower is providing to the grid. And in the larger picture, we have other renewable sources that are more than, capable of supplementing that lost generation from these smaller plants.
Yeah, I guess he was concerned about, it's clean energy, so why shut them down? But there are maybe other alternatives, as you say, that would be beneficial.
Absolutely. Great
yeah.
question, though.
Vern wanted to know, and this one maybe you may not be in a position to answer either of you, but let's bring it up anyway. Vern wanted to know about the environmental impact of lithium batteries in electric cars. The production, processing, and later disposal is impacting small and poor countries and areas. Any thoughts on that?
I don't know if Julia has any thought. I'll be more than happy to have her chime in, but I do have some personal thoughts about that. Energy storage is a big factor into our renewable energy future. With more diverse portfolio coming into our grid, wind and solar, which are more sporadic, we need energy storage sources. And the two main sources are battery storage, and then another one is hydro-based storage called pump storage technology. We haven't had a new pump storage project in the U.S. for almost 40 years. battery storage is the uprising, more innovative approach. I personally think I share the fear or concern of the recycling and potential environmental impacts of those battery storage, as well as how large can the scale to be with battery storage and what kind of other potential impacts there might be. In my opinion, pump storage is another viable technology that we really need to revisit and maybe reinvent some of these technologies to make it more sustainable. But there's definitely a trade-off for either one of those.
Yeah, and by pump storage, can you give us a picture of what that's like?
Sure. Yeah, just in the simple sense, it's basically similar to hydropower, where you see there's a reservoir attached with the dam. So for pump storage, there are two reservoirs. One is on the upper level, one is on the lower level. So when you have the lower reservoir, it's usually connected with a source of river flow that can feed into it. And then when you have a lot of flow, when you have less energy demand, then we use pumps to basically pump excess water into the upper reservoir and keep it there. So the upper reservoir is basically the battery. It's the big battery there. And when we need more energy for the grid, we send the water down from the upper reservoir to the lower reservoir. And with that drop of water, we call that the hydraulic head, we can generate energy. So we're basically storing the excess energy and then generate it when we need it. So that's a way to balance the grid and balance the supply and demand deficiency.
Interesting. Talking today with Yiying Zhang and with Julia Martine. Yiying is the new Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center Associate Director. Julia is a graduate student, but also a scientist in the GLBRC. Questions for them, give a call at 800-642-1234 or email us to ideas@wpr.org. Natalie Guyette, our producer today, Christina Myshock, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. We're taking a look at some of the work going on at the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center today with our two guests, Yiying Zhang, GLBRC Associate Director, Julia Martine, Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center scientist and grad student in the Department of Bacteriology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Questions or comments for them, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or feel free to email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Someone was wondering if the Great Lakes play a big role in water resources for things like bioenergy. Yiying?
Absolutely. The Great Lakes is, as we know, the largest freshwater body in the world, and is a huge component of the Mississippi River Basin. It plays so many roles in water quality, in freshwater supplies, and in providing the much-needed water resources for feeding to our soil and the nutrients for our soil, for crop growth. So it absolutely creates a very vital role in our research. Maybe we can let Julia chime in on some of the specific things and she's observed and studied.
Yeah, go ahead, Julia.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm a little bit removed from the Great Lakes in terms of my research, but I definitely enjoy looking out at Lake Mendota from the lab. And yeah, and I do. I mean, it's a really valuable resource to have, this big body of fresh water, for sure. And, you know, water in general is a really important part of the of the bioenergy industry. You know, that's definitely one of the big factors to consider in the sustainability of biofuels is the water usage. Because whenever we're growing bacteria, we're doing it in a in a reactor that's mostly water. So definitely an important factor.
Say, congrats, by the way, on your award, the Jennifer Reed Bioenergy Science Award. And that's, I guess that's an early career award for women at GLBRC. Do you have any idea where you'd like to see yourself going with this?
Yeah, definitely. So I have always been driven by a desire to help improve the world around me. And I'm fascinated with bacteria, and I'm fascinated with the chemistry of life. And I'm really grateful that I've been able to do work that combines something that I'm both interested in on an intellectual level and also feel really passionately about in terms of its greater impact on the world around me. So I definitely am excited to apply the training that I've had in microbiology to continue for the rest of my career to improve the lives of the people around me.
Robert in Glendale will give you a chance to join in. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I had a comment about the battery recycling issue. Two points. One is that it's possible to engineer lithium batteries so that they last a very, very long time. And the second comment is that there are battery storage technologies that are not lithium-based. Often they're heavier, but if they're used for essentially ground-based storage, it doesn't really matter. The question I had was that has anyone ever considered using the Milwaukee Deep Tunnel Project as a form of pumped hydro storage, where essentially the lake would be the battery and you'd run water in to generate electricity and pump it out to store electricity?
Yi Yang, what do you think? Has that ever been looked at to your knowledge?
I think there has been. I'm not aware of anything comes to kind of flourish to a level that's been seriously looked at. Of course, there are many, many aspects we have to consider when we think about kind of a pump storage concept, especially on environmental impacts, ecological impacts, and how that can change the pattern of the water in the lakes, and also looking at pumping technology. It basically needs two different reservoirs or water bodies that have differences in their altitude. So it's a complicated system, especially when you are utilizing open water like the lakes. Right now, most of the technologies that are being seriously looked at are called this closed loop system, so you have less impact to the open river flows. Therefore, it will be less environmentally hazardous or just have less impact. So with the open water, like lake, it takes a lot more study to really understand the potential impacts of that. So the long story short, I'm not aware of, I'm aware of some concept in that regard, but I'm not aware of any serious project that's being carried forward with this type of concept.
Interesting. Jack in Caledonia will give you a chance. Hi, Jack.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Thing with solar panels, their life expectancy is 10 years. Any solar, you know, people that are putting solar on their house, the government is subsidizing them about 50%, or is it higher? And then in 10 years, the cost to replace those solar panels, I imagine that they would just put new panels over the old ones. But if they have to throw the old ones away, has there been any recycling efforts about recycling old panels, or are they just thrown in the landfill?
I am sure I'm pretty sure there's been some work on that, but Yi Yang or Julia, any comment?
Julia, do you want to chime in, or I can take a stab at this?
Yeah, well, I think with the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center, the solar panels are a little bit outside of our area. We're mostly looking into you know, bioenergy fuels, so liquid fuels that are coming from biological sources.
Yeah. Yi-Ying, any comment?
Yeah, I can add a little bit of information that I gather as a non-expert in solar, so I want to put a condition there. So from what I know, the solar panels, they usually have about 20 to 25 years of life expectancy, even though the efficiency will decrease over time. And also there have been researches that show that they will last beyond the typical life expectancy, even beyond that point. Again, you're going to see a reduction in the efficiency, but it's not like at, you know, 20 years, you're going to have to replace everything altogether. And also, I've heard that there have been a lot of recycling technologies that have been developed, which will be able to recycle a big portion of those solar panels. It's not going to be 100%, but I think the technology is developing and advancing very quickly. By the time we do have to recycle some of these panels that are existing on our roofs, I'm hopeful that there will be new technologies in place that would, you know, help reduce a lot of those environmental hazards that may come out of the recycling process.
Yeah. Tony from Amory emailed to ask if there's research going on where you have two different temperatures sinks near each other so you can generate energy from that setup. I assume he's talking about temperature sinks in water, but maybe not. Ying?
That really is not my expertise. I've heard something kind of remotely before about that. I think there have been a lot of novel concepts that have been developed in something like that, but I really don't have the expertise to address that question from a technical point of view.
Yeah. Julia, I want to go back to you for a minute. Has being a woman in this field created any challenges or maybe even motivation for you?
Yeah, I think definitely women in sciences face the real challenge of kind of the expectation that, you know, I guess we have to maybe push a little bit harder to break in and even feel like, you know, we belong in the sciences. But I personally have, you know, been grateful to see so many women in science who are in positions of leadership, who are in faculty positions, who have been my teachers and mentors, and also my fellow students. You know, a lot of my friends and colleagues are really just incredibly brilliant and talented women. And so it's really, I feel like I am able to get a lot of inspiration from the women that I work with. And I'm really grateful to have role models in that sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Ian, I might have you comment on that as well. I was thinking about my own daughter, Emily, who's now graduating from high school this year. She'll be teaching a STEM class in Alaska for middle school students in June. And she and mostly other young gals her age will be involved in that. Do you think it's getting, do you think things are improving in that area, Ying?
I absolutely do. I think that a lot of programs are similar to the one that your daughter Emily is going through. I give them a lot of credit for taking the initiative to do that, to encourage other, you know, female students to get into STEM early on. I think a lot of initiatives out there to promote and encourage girls to get into the STEM field. It certainly has been a tough road for women over the last, you know, 30, 50, 100 years to get to a point where we have a lot of support from institution level, from national level, and also just from within our own organizations. But it has been, there has been a lot of challenges naturally associated with being a woman, being in the field that were traditionally dominated by men. But I certainly, I'm very optimistic, and I've seen a lot of improvement over the last decades or so. We definitely have come a long ways, and things are getting much better.
Yeah, I know. Emily wants to be a marine biologist, and, you know, maybe 50 years ago or 40 years ago or even 30 years ago, that might not have been something that she would have thought of if she'd been at the same age at that time.
Absolutely. Best of luck with her on that. I'm sure she's brilliant.
Well, she's pretty smart. She's hardworking.
That's important.
That's kind of the main thing. You know, you got to have be a little smart, but you also have to be hardworking. Julia and Yiying, I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. I really appreciate it, and look forward to visiting with you again. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having
you.
Me.
It's been a pleasure. Yiying Zhang is the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center Associate Director, and Julia Martine is a Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center scientist, grad student in the Department of Bacteriology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Folks from the GLBRC come by, about every 2 months or so and talk about different things that are going on. It's always fun to visit with them. And it's always fun to visit with our weather guys. They come by the last Monday of every month, and here they come again. As we'll talk climate and weather with our guests, Steve Ackerman and John Martin, next on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mehler.